everyone, and welcome to Indie Business Radio for Monday, October 15th, 2007. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Today's show is sponsored by Sunrose Aromatics, 100% pure and natural essential oils, including rare and exotic ones like vanilla and even butter. Who knew you could get fragrance oils from these plants? Sunrose can help you explore their benefits by making beauty and personal care products for yourself or your business. Learn more at sunrosearomatics.com. Thanks for joining us, everyone. You know, I've heard it said that there's at least one book in every person, and if you've been at the helm of a business for any period of time, you have some great stories to tell and wisdom to share in a book of your own. But finding the best way to catch the attention of a book publisher can be tricky at best. Who better to help separate the wheat from the chaff than a seasoned publishing professional? Deborah Balmuth says you need to be choosy and smart when it comes to pitching your book idea. She's the editor, the director of editors with Storybooks, where she's worked since 1993. Deborah has overseen the publication of countless books at Story, a book publisher with a strong independent streak and a backlist of more than 450 titles. This afternoon, she's here with me to talk about how to pitch your book idea. We'll take your comments and questions. Do join us at 800-773-0366, or you can email info@indiebusinessradio.com. Welcome to Indie Business Radio, Deborah.
Thank you, Donna Maria. It's great to be here.
So tell us, Deborah, how did you start your publishing career? What brought you into this industry?
Well, I actually, growing up, both of my parents were teachers, and my mother's an English teacher, and I grew up in a house that was always surrounded by books, and I actually majored in history in college, and I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do when I got out of college, but one of the first jobs I found was with a small family-owned publishing company in the Boston area. And I just loved it immediately. I just loved the idea of putting things into print and actually having an end product to your, to my work efforts that was a finished book. It was so exciting when those books would come into the office. It was a small, it was only five people in the company. And so I kind of had a great chance to be hands-on with a lot of different projects. We actually worked out of a bedroom of their house. It was that small. And in addition to that, to my mother, you know, encouraging me in terms of writing and reading. She was also really creative and doing a lot of hands-on activities. She used to take us berry picking, and she loved to sew and cook and make jam and garden. So those two things kind of came together for me at Story Publishing, where I am now, because we publish books that help people do more for themselves. And so I don't think it's a coincidence that I'm here editing books on, you know, growing organic vegetables and raising animals and making your own beauty care products.
Right. Well, that's a great great publishing house. I have to say, my book was published there. I'm really excited to say, Making Aromatherapy Creams and Lotions, and really has carved a neat niche for itself in terms of publishing books that, you know, empower people to kind of do it themselves.
Yeah, it's a little unusual actually for a publishing company to have a niche like that, but it's really nice to find a publisher like that. If you have a very specific area, if you find a publisher that goes deep into the area like that.
Mm-hmm. Deborah, you have been in this industry for such a long time, and we're going to talk about, you know, pitching a book to different publishers. But one of the things that I'd like for you to share from your perspective, having been steeped in the industry for so long with listeners, is how has the publishing industry changed since you joined Storybooks in 1993?
Well, I think most publishers would say that that the major change has been the distribution. I mean, when I just think about what's happened, there's been such a consolidation of the book-selling industry. And, you know, some of us are sad to see a lot of the independent bookstores have closed. But at the same time, there's these big mega stores like Barnes & Noble and Borders have opened and in some ways made bookstores a lot more accessible to people who might not have had accessibility to such a large selection of books before. But it can make it very difficult for publishers, because those two, especially those two large bookstores, there's a few other large chain accounts as well, they control more and more of the market, and it's actually centralized buying, so that the buying for Barnes & Noble is done centrally. You know, the decision about how many copies of a certain book they're going to have in various size stores is made in a central place. So that can make it very hard for a publisher if you don't have a buy-in from one of those large bookstores. You might wonder, it could really make or break a book. At the same time, channels, the internet has made a huge difference. I think channels like Amazon and other internet selling has opened up the possibilities for smaller publishers and even people who have self-published their book. Now you can go to Amazon and find absolutely any book that's in print. So that's kind of the flip side of it, I think, that there's a greater accessibility through internet marketers.
Right. We have to take the good with the bad, huh?
Yeah. I mean, they're just two different sides of the market, I think. And it's, you know, there are more and more books being published. I think it's harder for first-time authors to get noticed. And that's another challenge that I think is facing people that are thinking about writing their first book.
Well, let's talk about that, because it does seem, I think it's, you know, as you said, it does seem a lot harder for a first-time author, and really almost any author that's not, you know, blowing out the sales already, to get their book out. And Deborah, what are some of the basic things that someone should do first when they just suddenly it dawns on them, you know, I think I have a book idea? Where do they start in terms of putting something together to try and get that book out there?
Well, one of the first things that I would say is to make sure that there isn't another book that's exactly like on the on the topic that you're thinking that you want to write about. You probably have a different perspective on it, but it's really important to know what else is out there. Doing your background research is really important before you even start to approach a publisher. I really recommend to authors potential authors, that they go to bookstores and spend time there and look at similar books. It might be a book that's in a totally different field than what you're thinking about writing about, but it might be a book that has a similar structure to the way you're thinking of structuring it. If you wanted to put together a book that was a collection of stories, success stories, say from small farms, which is one of the areas that we publish into. You might look at a book that could be on a totally different topic area, but about success stories. And looking for a good model, and really thinking through what's the organization of my book, what is the main point that I really want to get across in this book. And then also, what I find is you can really do well at a bookstore is to start to notice publishers and what they're who's publishing what, and get to. Usually, when we read books, we don't pay a lot of attention to the publisher, but if you start paying attention, you start to get a feeling like, oh, this book was done by the publisher who also did this other book, and you start to get a feeling for different publishers have different identities, and starting to think about that too. Is there a place? Is there a publishing company where my book would particularly fit well?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting that you say that. I read somewhere recently, and I can't remember where, Deborah, I'd like your comment on this. Someone said that an editor's job at a book publisher is to find reasons not to publish your book rather than to find reasons to publish your book. I don't think it was meant to sound like in any way mean, but it's just, you know, I guess you get so many that only the really stellar ones will stand out.
Well, yeah, we get a lot of proposals, and we also, you know, this is a business, and it's a risky business. We don't know when we're making a choice to publish a book. It's we're investing a lot. As I always say to authors, this is a partnership. You know, the author is doing the writing. We're investing an equal amount of time and effort into actually producing the book, and the editing costs us money, the design costs us money, if we're putting in art, it costs us money, and if we're investing, you know, $25,000 or $35,000 in developing that book, we want it to pay off well, as well as the author does. So it's a serious decision to publish a book. So yeah, we have to look at each proposal from many different angles and examine every reason why we might not publish a book, to make sure that we are making the right decision for everybody. Because I don't want an author to invest a lot of time in writing a book that doesn't sell very well. It's disappointing for everybody.
It's a lose-lose for everyone. We're talking with Deborah Balmes, the Director of Editors at Storybooks. Deborah, what is the basic overview of the process of publishing a book from the time you decide with an author that you're going to publish a book? I guess you've written a contract and the author has accepted it. What are the basic milestones in a publication of that book?
Well, I think it's probably a little bit different for each publisher, but our process here is we issue the contract to the author, and usually in that contract we specify a word count, a manuscript length, and we also have already discussed with the author the positioning of the book and what the content's going to be. We've approved the outline, and we often, the editor often asks the author to send draft chapters while they're writing so that we can keep in touch and make sure that we're still on the same page and are carrying forth the same vision so that you don't end up submitting a manuscript that might be very different from what the publisher is, what we're envisioning the manuscript's going to be. Once the manuscript comes in-house, our process here is usually about a year long.
Mm-hmm.
And it begins with what we call developmental editing, which is the editor really looks at the organization of the book and the substance of the book and has a lot of back-and-forth conversation with the author about that organization. There might be suggestions for, gee, I wonder if we switch chapters 2 and 3, if that might make a lot more logical sense to the reader. The editors are really trying to play the role, as I say, of the intelligent reader. It's like, what is this, the reader who comes to this book and picks it up, what is that reader looking for? And your editor is really your first reader of your book. So the feedback that you as an author get from the editor is often is very helpful, and I think it's something that we try to have, you know, good open communication between the author and the editor. There might also be very substantive issues, like the author says, well, you know, there's a step missing in these instructions, or I think we're going to need to illustrate these instructions. Can you provide some reference so we can have an illustrator show step by step what this is, because it's hard to understand it through words. There might be photography that's needed, depending on, you know, if the publisher has budgeted for that, and if the book's in black and white or if it's in color. There are a lot of things that can happen at that stage. There might also even be whole things missing, like the editor might say, oh, you know, what would really make this book perfect is if we added a chapter on this one other topic, and then this will be a book that will really stand out from the other books that are out there on the topic. So after that developmental editing is done and the substance of the manuscript is quite complete, then we send it actually to a copy editor who does the line editing, making sure that all the grammar is correct, that the spelling is correct and consistent, that there's consistency in the way different elements in the text are treated. Then the author reviews that final manuscript, and basically we say at that point, okay, the manuscript is complete, and we're ready to go into design. Just to backtrack a little bit, while we're editing, we actually have our designers actually start to already work on some sample page layouts so that we can really figure out, especially since our books are so intensive how-to, we want to be sure that the design is developed to complement the editorial and to help convey the information very clearly. So we want to have lots of headings. We want to be sure that we have the step-by-step directions are laid out very clearly. We want to be sure the typography is clear. We want to provide nice various elements on the page that will make the text very interesting. Maybe there's some sidebars, maybe things that will help pull the reader in and help the reader enter the book in a lot of different places. So we've approved those sample pages, the manuscript is complete, and then the design department begins page layout. And then they produce a full set of pages, and they work completely on computer screen, and they scan in any illustrations or photographs, so they're able to print out complete sets of the pages for us to review, and the author sees them at one point as well. The other part that's happening while this page layout is going on is that the cover is being designed. And the cover is the key marketing tool. I mean, if you always say you can't judge a book by its cover, well, we know that most people do.
You can judge the amount of you're going to get. Hey, Deborah, that is an incredible amount of steps, and it's so wonderful to have that information. It looks absolutely effortless when a book comes off of Stories Presses. I think that's all that goes into it. We're going to come back and talk about the all-important cover in just a few minutes. We're talking with Deborah Balmas this afternoon, the Director of Editors at Story Books. This is Indie Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. We're here this afternoon talking with Deborah Balmas, Director of Editors at Story Books, and she's sharing some information with us that is so valuable for any of you indies out there that think you have a book in you and you want to bring it to market. We've just covered many of the steps associated with the publishing process. And when we went for our break, Deborah, you had just started talking about the all-important cover. Let's talk about that for a minute.
Yes, yeah, so what I was starting to talk about was that while the pages are being laid out of a book, the cover is being designed. And as part of the cover design also is the title. And I have to say, the title and the cover are two of the things that I think authors probably feel the most strongly about, but publishers feel the most strongly about as well, because as I was starting to say, it's really the key marketing tool of the book. And our covers are approved by the marketing department here, which is very different from the insides of the book. Our marketing department, looks at, and they want to know the content, but they don't have input into the content. But the cover design and the title are two things that they're the ones that are going to go out and sell the book, and they're looking at it and saying, does this title and this cover telegraph what's unique about this book in 30 seconds? Because they're thinking about going into that bookstore and making a pitch to the bookstore owner, the buyer of those books, and trying to sell them, get them to order multiple copies of the book. So those two things are really critical.
And once you've settled on the cover and that all-important catchy title, is it a matter of putting a bow on it then and getting revving up the printers, or is there more before that?
Well, there's actually, as we've been doing more and more, as our business has become more technological, we actually do a lot more in-house, and some publishers do this and some don't, but they're certainly finalizing the files. There's proofing, and if the book's in color, there's color correcting, which we actually do in-house. Some printers do that as well. So we're not printing our own books. We have a production director who finds the printers, and she uses printers. We've used printers all over the world, actually. And depending on what the trim size of the book is and the particular needs of how many copies we're printing and if it's in color or not, she'll find the right printer that we can get the best price from. Right. Now, when the book's printed, for the sales department, that's just the beginning of the life of the book. Getting it into the bookstores is really critical. We do take bookstores do pre-order. That's why we do catalogs in advance. But then there are also a lot of non-bookstores, which is becoming a bigger and bigger part of the book market. So gift shops and mail order sources and specialty stores. So there's a lot of sending out samples, and then there's the whole publicity component, which is very much is more and more important. And authors are a key part of that. What authors can really make all the difference in terms of the reception that a book gets when it's finally out there in the bookstores.
Well, that's interesting. Is that one of the ways, Deborah, that things have changed? That it kind of used to be all on the shoulders of the book publisher, you know, a couple of decades ago to do all the promotional work?
I think that's probably a good point. It probably has changed a lot more. And I think some authors are surprised at how much publicity they're expected to do, and also how much effort they need to, you know, how invested they need to be. I mean, I really do say to authors, you know, writing a book is a hard way to make a living, if you can even make a living. But there has to be another reason in order to really be successful. It has to be, you have to have another reason for wanting to publish a book. Is it going to promote your, you know, professional, your name, get your name out there and promote you in a professional, in your profession? Or is it going to give you a sense of personal satisfaction of a goal that you've always wanted to accomplish? Or are you just going to have the satisfaction of knowing that you're putting information in people's hands that that you've been putting in people's hands, maybe through teaching or workshops or lecturing, and now you have another vehicle for doing that through a book? So it's really important to have those reasons, and I think that provides a great incentive for doing publicity once the book is out.
Right. So, Deborah, you've got the book out, and then you talked just now about how important it is for the author to be vested in the promotional work that's done. What are some of the best ways that you've seen for authors to do that once the book is out?
Well, that's another thing that's changed, I think, in the last recent years. I think blogs are incredibly important. They can be particularly important, or email newsletters. I think using the internet has really given authors a whole new venue that can be much more effective and more cost effective, definitely, than book tours, which there's fewer and fewer publishers that are sponsoring book tours. Book signings are a hard way to sell books, really. Going to bookstores and, you know, you might sign 20 books. Of course, that can be a good way of getting the word out. And if every one of those people who got a signed book goes and tells three or four other people, that can be a way of starting a grassroots movement. But I found that doing internet work has just been incredibly successful for many of our authors.
Using the internet is just, I mean, that statement could have been any industry, anything. It's such a wonderful, efficient tool, and oftentimes it's so much fun.
Yeah.
To reach so many people at one time.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
Well, I was also going to say, I mean, for teachers, for people who teach or lecture, that's another great way of selling your own books, and it's also a great way of making a little bit more money than just having the publisher sell the book, if you have a venue like that, but not all authors do.
Do you have an idea for a book that you're interested in getting a seasoned publisher's tips and insights on pitching it to a publisher? We've got Deborah Balmuth here, and she might be able to offer you some really unique insights. You can call your question or comment in 800-773-0366 or email info@indiebusinessradio.com. Deborah, what are some of the things that you would recommend a first-time author think about when it comes to either pitching the book to a publisher or publishing it themselves?
Well, the first important thing to do in terms of pitching, I think, is to really have a strong book proposal. And that means really answering that question, what's the hook of this book? What's the central premise of this book? And I find that most really good book proposals have a single one or two paragraph description of the core reason why the book should be. It's got to be compelling. Is it that you have an original thought, or Do you have an original voice? I mean, both of those things really are important in convincing a publisher. I think that yours is a book that they ought to consider. And if you can't easily state your core message in a single paragraph, then I think you're not going to interest a publisher. The other core thing is to understand who your audience is and be able to express that in a short paragraph. You might cite statistics. You might talk about popular trends and things like, you know, with the price of oil going up, people are spending a lot more time at home, investing in their gardens. We do a lot of gardening books. I mean, that kind of idea that, okay, so that people are investing in their gardens, is there something new in backyard, in something new that people are doing in their backyards that we might want to do a book about. There might be a popular book out there, like, you know, Barbara Kingsolver's book right now on animal vegetable miracle about eating locally. And does that tie in with an idea that you've always had for a book that the people who are readers of that kind of book? So you need to find some kind of clear way to tell the publisher who you see as your intended audience for the book. Enthusiasm goes a long way in a book proposal, I find, too.
Yeah, just like anything else, sometimes you can sell whatever you're selling just by having such an incredible level of enthusiasm that people just can't resist you.
Yeah, I mean, because it's a leap of faith for everybody, for the publisher and for the author, you know. I mean, and once a book proposal is in-house with me and I'm looking at it and I say, oh, I really like this, then I have to sell it to our salespeople. So the enthusiasm of the author has to go a long way, and it needs to come through in the writing as well. You know, that's something that is, you know, obviously that's the medium here, so it needs to come through in the writing. You know, in terms of deciding about publishing or self-publishing, I think the decision to approach a publisher, as I was saying earlier, you know, if you find a publisher that you just start to feel this as you look at their books, look at their websites, it's really important to do that kind of background research. I mean, the quickest way to get a proposal rejected is to send it in and just have it addressed to whom it may concern or to the editor, or to have it be obviously a form letter that you're sending to several different publishers. That doesn't appeal to me at all.
And the editorial wastebasket pretty quickly.
Yeah, it doesn't take a lot to, most publishers have their publishing guidelines on their websites now, and they often have the names of specific editors in different topic areas. I mean, the other thing is getting proposals that are in topic areas that are totally unrelated to anything we publish into, and that doesn't show a lot of...
Well, I guess that doesn't build your confidence that they care much about trying to fit into your specific model there. Deborah, we've got a caller.
Okay.
Jamila is on line 3 from Maryland. Welcome to the show, Jamila.
Hi, Donna Maria. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for joining us. What's your question?
Good. Thanks for having me on. I had two questions for Deborah, and the first one was, what are some of the trends that she's seeing in the crafting, gardening, mind, body, spirit publishing arena that Storybooks is kind of keeping their eye on? And then my second question is, should a potential author, which I am a potential author, have an agent first to represent themselves, or should they just contact the publisher directly?
Deborah, I'm going to ask you to take that first question. We're going to take a break and come back for the second one. Hope that's okay with everyone. What are you seeing out there in the body care, mind, body, spirit arena, Deborah?
Well, it's interesting. You know, for a while we were doing a lot of books in the body care and mind, body, spirit area, and then we felt like the market had kind of gotten pretty full and pretty crowded in that area. And what happens is something pops up somewhere else, and Jamila asked about the crafts area, and knitting popped up in a big way about 6 or 7 years ago, and we quickly started publishing knitting books, which was an area that we'd always been interested in publishing into since we do a lot of craft books. And that's been a really fun area to develop. But lately we have been seeing, I mean, I think that in the mind-body-spirit area, boy, it's another area that is really crowded, although it's become so much more mainstream. And that I found is really interesting. We recently did a much expanded version of a book that we first published in 1993, the Herbal Body book by Stephanie Torlis, and she came back and actually started as a revision, but she doubled the size of that book, and we just reissued it as the Organic Body Care Recipes book. It's a whole new book, really, and it's gotten incredible response from the media, I think because there's so much mainstream interest in that area. So I'm watching that to see if, if the whole herbal products area has a revival of interest.
Yeah, and I bet that word organic is definitely great on the cover. We're going to take a break. And Jamila, if you can stay with us, I hope you will, to get your second question answered and see if you have any follow-up. This is Indie Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Back to the final segment of today's Indie Business Radio show. We are here this afternoon with Deborah Balmuth, the Director of Editors at Storybooks. And by the way, you can visit Storybooks online at story.com, S-T-O-R-E-Y. That's how you spell that. And you can go there and you can get all the information you need about the most recent books that Story's got out there. You can read about the authors. You can read about the topics, and you can even go online, right, Deborah, and check out their guidelines for submitting a book proposal. Is that true?
That's correct.
Great. So check it out, and if you've got one in mind, this is a great show to go back and listen to again to get all the pointers that Deborah's given so your proposal doesn't end up on her floor. So Jamila's second question was a really good one, and that was, how do I know whether or what should I consider when I'm thinking about getting an agent to pitch my book or doing it myself? Deborah, what do you think about that?
Well, I would say that about half to three-quarters of our authors do not have agents. There are certain areas where we do work with agents more often, especially in the cookbook area, and I think that's probably because getting a cookbook published is very competitive. And so that a lot of authors, and there's also many publishers who publish cookbooks, so I think a lot of cookbook authors feel like they need an agent to really cover the bases. But we, unlike some of the large publishing houses, we're one of the smaller ones, and we, having an agent or not having an agent doesn't affect how well your proposal is received or considered. We consider all proposals, solicited and unsolicited, and coming from an agent or not coming from an agent. Some of the reasons to have an agent are, as I said, if you want to really have your proposal pitched to a wide variety of publishers and you don't either have the time or the resources to do that kind of research yourself. The other thing is when it gets to the contract negotiation stage, some people don't feel comfortable negotiating a contract themselves, and an agent can be helpful in that process. Although you can also use a lawyer at that stage, you can have a publishing lawyer review the contract for you. So that's really the main reason. Sometimes some agents will do some proposal to help you develop your proposal and help you position it, so that if you're having trouble with that, an agent can be helpful in that as well. Although I think Story's a little bit unusual in the way that sometimes we, not it's not unusual for us to receive a proposal and think, this is interesting, and I think there's something here, and I think the author really is a good possibility, but the proposal doesn't seem quite right. And we will spend time working with the author in helping you to develop your proposal if we think it has potential, and we have some ideas about how it could be fine-tuned to really hit the market a little bit, in a little bit more strongly. So I think some other publishers our size probably do that. I don't think that some of the larger publishers have the time to be able to do that.
And I would imagine that the answer to that question for each publisher might actually be at their publishing guidelines. Do they only take submissions from agents, or will they take them from anyone?
Yeah, I think that's probably true, that that you could find that on their submission guidelines.
Great question, Jamila. Thanks so much for calling in, and good luck with
that
book. Hey, Deborah, so it's really interesting. One of the things that's really striking me about our conversation this afternoon is everything that you're saying indicates that there really aren't necessarily any rules, and that depending on the circumstance, for example, I guess if you get a book proposal that doesn't look exciting, you're not going to work with the publisher. But if you get one that doesn't look exciting, I'm sorry, you're not going to work with the author. But if you get one that doesn't really look exciting but looks like it has potential, then, you know, depending on some things that you consider, some of which I guess would be tangible, some not, you would sit down and say, you know, let's think about how we might be able to work this.
Yeah, it's interesting. There are a lot of intangible things, and timing is a big part of it. It might, sometimes I have a proposal that somebody sent me and it doesn't seem quite right, and I put it aside, and then 6 months later, we actually do a fair amount of idea generation in-house because we are so niche-oriented that we're like the herbal area. You know, I'm watching that area. If in 6 months from now I say, gee, you know, I think there's something really new here. I was looking, you know, I mean, there are all kinds of things that I could be watching. I'm watching trends, and so I might go back to a proposal from 6 months ago and go, you know, I remember that proposal, and I think now might be the time. So timing is a big part of it, too, and sometimes if a publisher has just published another book that's too close to the one that you're proposing, they might not be interested in your idea then either. So it's hard to explain, but the timing and sometimes for me it has to do with what books are on our backlist are selling well right now. There could be a book that's 5 years old that suddenly it's selling well, and our salespeople are saying, gee, do we have anything else on, you know, making your own beer from whatever, you know, from herbs or whatever, you know, I never know when those kinds of comments might come up. So, the intangible components are hard to explain.
So interesting that you're focusing too on the importance of the sales team. I know, you know, people who sell products themselves is one thing, but when you have a sales team, you really have a great opportunity to get firsthand insight into what the customers are looking for. And you've got it. You can't put in their hands something that is, you know, that they can't get excited about.
Exactly. Yeah, they're a real barometer for us, and they're out doing trade shows, and they'll come back with book ideas sometimes too, or they'll say, gee, you know, five people asked me for a book on this, and it happened with, we have a whole series of livestock books, and somebody came back and said several times, you know, I really think we should do a book on raising meat goats. There's a lot more. We had a book on dairy goats, and she was going to shows out in the West Coast and hearing a lot more demand for this, and so finally we did it, and the book is doing very well. So she was onto something that, you know, we weren't picking up on just from the mainstream media and the kinds of, you know, feelers that we had out there.
Right, and, you know, it's funny you mentioned those knitting books. I remember just being a story author. I've, you know, kept track of what's going on over the years looking at the website, and I just remember that slew of knitting books that came out,
yeah.
And got some of them, and picked up old knitting needles from you.
Yeah.
It happened to coincide with the birth of my second child, so I got on this knitting blanket frenzy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny how the trends feed the popular culture as well as the popular culture feeds the trends, I think. So.
Yeah. It's interesting that, you know, once the information is out there, you talk about the Stephanie Torlis book, which was so popular when it first came out.
Right.
Once that information is out there, it does cycle, and it never really gets sale, and I think it's really unique that Story has such a big backlist. It's like nothing ever gets stale because you guys keep making sure that you're cycling through your material and using it wisely.
Right, and I mean, the only thing that might get stale is the look of the book. So, you know, in the case of the Herbal Body book, you know, at the time that book came out, the look was perfect. This kind of brown bag, kind of, you know, gritty kind of look to it with natural paper and everything. Now it's a whole different trend. So with the organic body care recipes, it's a white cover, this very vibrant colors, kind of tropical looking, and it just shows how the audience has changed a little bit too, you know. And but if we can do something like that to refresh a book, I mean, that actually has a lot of, as I said, a lot new content. But sometimes it's a matter of just coming back and doing a minor updating and a new cover.
Mm-hmm. That's so fascinating to me. Now, one of the things that I know, one of the questions that people ask me as an author, because I've written a book that was published by Story, and also books, you know, that I've self-published.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are really interested in knowing from someone who has your perspective, how is an author viewed by the public, generally speaking, based on whether their book is self-published or not? Have you noticed anything like when you go to publishing conventions and things of that nature, what are some of the things that would-be authors can think about when, you know, and throw that into the mix as well? Because obviously you want to have if you're a book author, you kind of want to have a certain level of, you know, receptibility precede you when you're talking about your book.
Right, right. Well, I think that there's a lot more receptivity to self-publishing now than there has been. As I said, with outlets such as, you know, Amazon and other internet sales outlets, I think we know that there are a lot of books being published that are very worthy of being published but didn't find the right, you know, publishing home. And so I think, I really think that if you have a niche, and it might not be a book that there's an audience a huge audience for, but if you have a niche audience and you have access to that audience and you can invest the time in marketing your book, then I think self-publishing can be a very good option for there's actually a growing group of people self-publishing. There's a group called Independent Book Publishers Association. And PMA is actually it used to be called Publishers Marketing Association, so PMA is the acronym for the organization, and they have a great website. It's pma-online.org, and they're a great group of people that are involved, small publishers, people who are self-publishing, and it's a real networking organization. They have a lot of, they have courses, they have an annual conference, at the time of the Book Expo America, which is the trade show of the book publishers of the United States that happens every year. So there's a lot of networking groups for people who are, there's a lot of more recognition that self-publishing is a very viable option.
And Deborah, have you noticed that it's harder these days to get a fiction book published? Now, we've been talking a lot about how-to and nonfiction. What sorts of things are you seeing in the fiction arena?
Boy, I don't really have my finger on the pulse of that very well, but I think it's, I think that there are some small publishing options, but I do think I think you probably do need an agent with the, in fiction.
Yeah, I would imagine that's a whole lot tougher, and your conversation about self-publishing makes me think about that book written years ago by, I can't remember his name, but it was called The Celestine Prophecy.
Oh, right.
And,
right.
I believe that was self-published and pitched around for a long time, and he just kept getting turned down. And I think I read once that one of the things that happened was just a change in the public mindset. People were ready for it. There was a publisher ready to pick it up.
Yeah, I think self-publishing can be a great way to start to get your toe in the door and start to open the door, especially for fiction. And I certainly don't look, you know, if somebody sends me a self-published book, I think that's great. I mean, it shows a real investment if the author's gone to that. And we have picked up books that were self-published if they've had good, you know, if the author's done well with it, sold a few thousand copies, we're like, wow, that's encouraging. If we think that it's a strong, you know, there really is a much bigger market for it. We just did that with a cookbook, actually, that the authors had self-published and done very well with previously.
Right. If they can do that on their own, imagine what they can do with your entire staff of people who pick layouts and pictures and all that stuff.
Right, right.
So that's a good way, I guess, to gauge that. Well, Deborah, we are almost out of time, but before we go, are there any things that Story itself is or isn't looking for now? We can give listeners some tips. If not, that's fine. I've got plenty of other questions to ask. More things you're not looking for?
Well, for a while we were doing some children's books, and we're not doing children's books currently, and that is one thing I still get proposals for that people are asking me about. And I think other than that, I'm really, you know, open to receiving proposals. As I said, it's they do need to be written proposals. I guess that was another thing that I was going to say in terms of proposals. I really, you know, I don't encourage people to cold call editors. I want to just run an idea past them. It's really
with the great book idea. Here's a bullet point summary. Not a good idea.
Right. But as I said, we're not doing a lot in the mind, body, spirit area right now. I'm just kind of watching that. We have done, we've done a few gift books in that area, but it's competitive. It's competitive for us too. So we're very selective in that area.
Yeah, and I would mention the other thing too, Deborah, is you just said early on in the show that it's a year at least, usually, between contract and book. A lot can change in the market in that time frame.
Right.
You've still got to put the book out because your resources are vested in it.
Well, in fact, because we are really focused on the backlist, we're looking for books that are going to last a long time. So even in the knitting area, we've been turning away from doing so many pattern books, and we're doing more techniques books because I really want to do books that, just like in gardening, you know, that we've always been known for our techniques books in gardening, books on pruning and various types of techniques. And so those are books that will have long lives.
Well, Deborah, thank you. This has just been an information-packed show. You guys remember No Kids Books and the long-lasting tip that Deborah mentioned, and she mentioned several, but really pitch a book that has a long life, that you want to be the Stephanie Torlis of your particular niche. And if your book is going to be popular 15 or 20 years after it first comes out, then you have an endless minefield of positive opportunities to promote it. Thank you so much for joining us, Deborah. I hope
You're
that
welcome.
You guys will understand a lot more about publishing than you did before you enjoyed this show, and I hope it's been informative. I certainly think so. Indie Business Radio is produced by Indie Business Media, LLC. Join the discussion at the Indie Business Blog at indiebusinessblog.com, and you can stream or download all of my radio shows on my website at indiebusinessradio.com. It's free, it's fun, it's informative, and it will help you grow your business. Enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Have a good week, everyone.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.